Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left. Checks
2 weeks
left.
Ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
To Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio this fabulous Saturday, September 5th, the day before my brother's birthday. We are broadcasting live from the Log Mahal in Payson, Arizona. And this Saturday, like every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth Radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of financial independence. And this week, like every week, without exception, we have a fabulous broadcast for you. And I'm so excited for this week's Key Create Credit because you are going to be overwhelmed with credit information. Our Investor's Edge guest, as well as our key guest, will be talking about credit in its various genres, as well as our associate producer and News by the Numbers segment host, Karen Gurm, is back in the saddle this week. So I know that you are all excited about that. My you're all excited that Karen is back in the saddle. So we wish her family well as she departs California and returns to Arizona at her duties at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. So we are all grateful to have her back. Nobody more grateful than me because she makes life impossible without her. She certainly has built her value here at the foundation, let me tell you that. In addition to our News by the Numbers segment, we also have Alyssa Wagenhals joining us this week for the ever-popular Keys for Teens segment, and that's where we are going to talk about the perspective of finances on teenagers and how teenagers interpret our Keys to Riches plan so both you and your teens can become financially independent. The greatest thing about involving your children in your financial planning process is because when you get them buy-in, it's easier to get them to behave once you've already got them to make the commitment to be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. This week's Minutes on Your Money, we are going to talk about lessons of the Great Recession. And are you on Facebook? Are you bragging about how much money you're making? Well, you maybe not want to. Or either that, make sure you're settled up with the tax man before you do, because we are going to talk about new collection methods from Uncle and State Sam. Yes, we are. Our Investor's Edge guest is Kenny Goldie. He's going to tell us how he dumped his debt. He inherited $250,000 worth of debt, and he's going to give us the tips, tricks, tools, and information to negotiate away our debt too. And then our key guest to help illustrate the concepts of creating credit for this week's key, we have Curtis Arnold, who is CEO of he is all over the news. USA Today writes about him. Wall Street Journal writes about him. He's also on the Today Show and every other morning show you can think of, and he's going to be joining us later in the second hour of our broadcast to talk about credit and what you need to know. Cardrating.com, that's it. So, in addition, to all of this fabulous stuff. We also have our regularly scheduled segment of the Millionaire Minute, which gives you 60 seconds of tips and tools that you can incorporate right now in your life today to help you create that millionaire thought process, and you too can become financially independent. I wanted to mention a particular company right here at the outset of the broadcast, because yesterday when we arrived here at the Log Mahal, for anybody who has ever owned a cabin or a place up in the woods where there is all kinds of fabulous rolling hills, and with rolling hills comes running water when it rains, and we had a torrential storm up here, evidently knocked out the power and everything. And the guys at Tree Pro, Anthony and his crew, I politely convinced them that it would be in their best interest to assist me in moving a ton of dirt that had washed through the culvert and was blocking my driveway. And they so graciously picked up their shovels and came over and helped. And so I wanted to talk to you about Tree Pro, because Tree Pro does all phases of tree work, landscape and design all over the state of Arizona. And so let me just tell you, it's quitting time, and these guys didn't quit for me. If you would like more information or want to contact Tree Pro directly, I want to give you their telephone number. So grab a pencil. It's 928-474-0102. 928-474-0102. It is always great when you have repairs to do around the house and you have no idea who to call and you just don't want to whip out the yellow pages and trust the biggest ad. So I have had personal experience with Tree Pro, and they are very thoughtful and they will work until you get the job done. And they weren't even within my employ when I borrowed them. So I was super grateful. They were doing some work for the association, and I talked them into putting in some overtime on my property. So I just wanted to thank them very much for that. So Tree Pro, all over the state of Arizona, 928-474-0102. If you have landscape issues, they are your solution. So today, let's talk about some minutes on our money, shall we? So as we seem to breathe a bit of a sigh of relief that fortunately for some of us, hopefully many of us, the sky hasn't fallen in. But let's not forget what we learned from economic hard times. And this is from Philip Moeller of U.S. News and World Report. He writes this week that although it's unclear whether the economy has hit the bottom, investment markets are moving up, jobless rates didn't get any worse, and I take issue with his next statement, cash for clunkers has given the auto industry a real boost. I think crap for clunkers took out buyers that were going to go buy down the road and forced them to buy now. So I think that we're still going to hit another bottom in that market. But, you know, who am I? Just this lowly little broadcaster, an economics major. But what do I know? Stimulus funds are supposedly making their way into the real world, although the people who need it, I don't think, have received it yet. But at the risk of tempting fate, Philip tells us it's probably safe to venture outdoors once more. No sky crashing down on your head. Life is not ending. There will be a World Series this fall, and college football stadiums are starting to pack up with fans. So before moving forward into the better times, though, he wants us to think a bit about how we responded to the big problems that began emerging in 06 and 07. Now, this is where we had the run-up in 06, and we had the pop of the real estate and mortgage bubbles in 07. So it says, what are some of the clear money lessons we've learned? And he's got six of them to talk about. He says, our children and grandchildren may forget many of them, but lest we better not forget the lessons of our parents and grandparents. Experts are often wrong. Don't forget that our current problems were predicted by the very few people and the smart money that spent a lot more time protecting itself than helping anyone else. all of the kind of words that we receive from banks, brokerages, real estate companies didn't amount to much when crunch time arrived. Now, remember, folks, on this broadcast, for those of you who are just listening for the first time, in 2004, we predicted that this was going to happen in the mortgage markets. I saw the bubble, and I knew it wasn't going to be sustainable. Nobody wanted to recognize the indicators. And I said, when median income and median home price get out of whack like they did, especially here in Arizona with our service economy, not good. Not good. And I told you it was going to happen, and I predicted it almost to the day. Because I said, give me 3 to 5 years, and I'm going to give you an economic crisis you have never seen. I should pull that broadcast and play it for you one day. You guys will be interested to see. And I said, mark my words. I was right, however. They are wrong, according to Philip. Number two, budgeting is a tool. It says, Philip says that he spends a lot less money each month than he did a couple of years ago. But most days, he feels like the quality of his life has improved. He says that he owes much of the credit to the hour or so he spends each month working on his household budget. And as you know, we just passed our break the budget key, and we don't budget anymore on this show. We create healthy savings and spending plans. And he says that he doesn't spend much cash or write many checks. He says that he charges as much as he can on credit cards that provide rebates and pay them off every month. He says that he does all of his bills through online banking and downloads them into a spreadsheet. And as he inches closer to his own retirement, his downsized spending profile has become a great adjustment. Even if the economy and stock market soars for years, he says he's never giving up his spreadsheet. So I think that that's pretty cool. We are building out a budgeting tool for the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation that's going to help use your information and show you how to create a healthy savings and spending plan. And it's also going to be able to show you the fastest way to reduce your debt and get that emergency fund built. I'm so excited. I've been working with the designers day and night to get this created, and this is going to be part of our membership-driven website that we'll be rolling out here soon. So, yes, he says budgeting is cool, but I say break the budget. That's cool. It's cooler because you have a better handle on things. And just like dieting, budgeting is something we go on to and off of, so we don't want to do that. We want to be creating a healthy savings and spending plan. That way, if we have that occasional Twinkie or chocolate bar, it's not going to affect our waistline. And conversely, having a healthy savings and spending plan, and you cheat here and there on a little something-something for yourself, it's not going to wreck the wallet. Philip also says, everything is negotiable. Tough times make times tough for shoppers, and bargaining for a better deal is now becoming part of our DNA. And so even though retail pricing is disappearing in a world of online discount stores and aggressive bloggers, a few vendors, such as Apple, can still get away with premium prices because it's linked to the value perception. And remember, reality isn't reality. Perception is reality. And other than that, though, just about everything you can seem to negotiate for. And I know people that have done that regardless, good times, bad times, average times. I grew up with perpetual negotiators. And so I've learned that, allow the sticker value to sink in and be shocked by that price. That's what we should do. We should do a segment on how to negotiate. Wouldn't that be great? Neurolinguistic programming has phenomenal negotiating tools. Maybe we should do something like that. I'll have to make a note of that for a future broadcast. Philip also recommends to actively manage your investment accounts. Don't invest it and forget it. Don't be passive. Check in. Read those quarterly statements. See where you're going, up or down. See what kind of fees those accounts are charging you for managing your money. You may not want to do it because we remember that from our knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful key, where we learn how to delegate those responsibilities for the things that we do not wish to know. But that doesn't mean, once you delegate it, that you don't create a system of accountability for those people. So actively manage your investment accounts. Number five, this is an important one. So important, so that the Arizona Association of Realtors recognized that maybe they should create a document that discloses this information to kind of do a CYA and keep the dogs from chewing their behinds when people promise returns that aren't there. They've created a document that says markets can be cyclical and value goes up and down. So number five is don't bank on housing wealth. Hopefully everybody won't make this mistake again, although, but I am from Arizona, and we already did this once with the RTC, and evidently that wasn't a big enough lesson for everyone when our real estate markets were destroyed, and you were able to buy land for pennies on the dollar. Okay, so this happened like 20 years ago, but that shows you how short our memory is, and or the people who want to deny remembering certain things. So don't bank on housing wealth, and your appreciation is not an ATM machine. Get that through your head. And number six, stay healthy, stay solvent. Okay, people who get regular exercise are healthier. They are mentally as well as physically healthier. And I think this is an important one because when we were cavemen, we had fight or flight when we had stress in our lives and we had a response to that stimulus. But here, we don't get to attack the lion or run away from the lion. So what that means for us is that we have all those chemicals that tell us to either run or fight running through our bodies, and we're not doing anything about it. We're not releasing it by running or fighting. And so it builds up, and that stress is where we get cancer and all kinds of horrible, debilitating illnesses that take us out slowly, and we suffer. So stay healthy. You don't have to join a gym to be healthy. You can still work out at home. There's all kinds of television programming with great exercise. So these are the six money lessons of the Great Recession, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, that may be part of a trivia question that the ever-popular and intelligent Karen Gurm might whip into her e-zine that she publishes every week. Are you a subscriber of the e-zine? If you're not, you need to be, because that gives you all of who's coming up in this week's show, plus the trivia question so you can research it from a previous broadcast. Okay, to subscribe, you simply send an email to E-Z-I-N-E, at unlockyourwealth.com. And a final note for Minutes on Your Money, tax collectors are trolling Facebook. So if you are purporting to have so much money, yet you're pleading your case to the tax man about why you can't pay your bills, think again, because they are using that as a skip tracing tool. Also, other bill collectors are doing that. So if you're pleading hardship to them, make sure that you have a frowny face on your Facebook and social media, because now they are using that. Since it's public information, you're putting it out there. It's free for everyone, so pay attention to that. Moving on, I am so excited about our Investor's Edge guest this week. Kenny Goldie is joining us. He is author of The Do-It-Yourself Bailout, How He Reduced His credit card debt from $212,000 to $30,000 in just 6 months. He saved over $100,000. He is an independent filmmaker and a writer. Okay, so he's not a big debt consultant like you would expect him to be. He is just somebody who became a victim of an unfortunate circumstance, and he was able to, on his own, figure how to handle it. He also has a ton of YouTube videos. He's got websites. He's got all kinds of information. He's appeared everywhere teaching people how to get themselves out of debt without having to hire a third party to facilitate that. So I would like to welcome Kenny Goldie to the show. Kenny, are you there?
I'm here. What a great intro. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm telling you, you know, so many people don't realize that there's a lot of things that they can do this themselves if they just applied themselves.
It's true.
So tell us about your unfortunate circumstance that you were able to turn into this fabulous book and be able to help people.
Yeah, it's amazing how you never quite know where life is going to lead you, isn't it?
You're so right in that.
As you mentioned, I'm an independent filmmaker. I've been making movies for about 20 years. I've always followed the same pattern, and it's always worked for me. I've gone out, raised money through investors to make a film, and then sold the film, paid off the investors, made some profit, and moved on to the next one. It's been a pattern that, like I said, has worked. And on my last film, which was called Uncross the Stars, we shot it in the spring of 2007 in Arizona. While we were shooting, my investor and good friend sadly got ill, was hospitalized, and subsequently passed away, leaving me with $250,000 in bills to finish the film that I had never anticipated would be mine. So based on my previous experiences of always having sold my films after making them, I put the bulk of that, $212,000, on a variety of different credit cards and lines of credit. Actually, I had 7 different credit accounts with 6 different major U.S. banks with the intent of finishing the film, selling it, and paying all that off. Only the day that we screened our film for buyers was just about the same week, if not the same day, that the Federal Reserve bought Bear Stearns in the spring of 2008, and the entire credit community just collapsed, as we all know. And film acquisitions companies buy films on credit the same way most companies that buy large, you know, expensive items buy them with credit, and there was no credit. So the film didn't sell, and I was left holding this over $200,000 in debt on credit cards, thinking, now I don't know what to do. Plan A didn't work. So plan B was visit a bankruptcy attorney and say, what are my options? Because I don't see anything that's going to make me $200,000 in the short term. I was paying nearly $4,000 a month in interest. When you added that to my regular expenses and my home mortgage, it was almost $9,000 or $10,000 a month in outflow with no income at the time, because I was committed to my investor's heir, who was now my business partner, to, you know, selling this film, which was kind of my full-time job. And so my bankruptcy attorney said, yes, well, bankruptcy is an option, and explained bankruptcy to me, and this is how it works. But before you go that route, if you're interested, there's also the process of debt settlement. And I said, well, debt settlement, what is that? How does it work? He said, it's the process of calling up your creditors and offering them an amount less than you actually owe to settle out the account in full. And I was kind of surprised. This was a year and a half ago. You hadn't started hearing all the radio ads and television commercials for these third-party companies to settle your debts. It wasn't quite national news yet. I couldn't find any information on it. I looked at the Internet. I went to the library. There were no books written. There were a couple of websites with 2 or 3 bullet points that didn't help me very much. So I decided to do it myself, and I just jumped in and started calling up banks and my credit card companies and explaining my situation to them, and slowly over the course of the next several months started reaching settlements. And the process was not only one of getting out of my extraordinary debt much quicker than I would have had I tried to pay off my minimum payments forever, but it was also an incredible emotional journey. Because a lot of people attach a lot of emotion to finances in general, a lot of negative emotion to debt, pain, fear, stress, anxiety, and I lived through all of that. It was horrible. When I was $200,000 in debt, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I lost a girlfriend, I wasn't having fun in my life. I was letting the debt define who I was in my life. And I made a choice as I was going through the process to live my life, even though I had $200,000 in debt, as best I could and enjoy it as best I could through this process, rather than let the debt define who I was through this process.
That's a tough road to go. One of our keys in our Keys to Riches Financial Freedom series is take emotion out of the picture. It's a stressful part mm-hmm. of what we do with our finances. And mostly it's because we work so hard for the money that we make that we create all of this emotional bias to how we want to spend it, and we've got entitlement feelings and mm-hmm. and all of that that gets caught up in it. And the same thing happens when we borrow too much, or like in your situation when you're a victim of a life event, a life-changing event that you have no control over.
Exactly. And not only that, yes, there's a lot of emotion. I'm glad to hear you guys address that in your program. I do as well in the do-it-yourself bailout. We attach a lot of identity to our finances as well. You know, we attach identity to a lot of stuff, obviously, our homes and our cars and our clothes and our spouses and our jobs. We vest meaning in who we are to the things we have and the things we do. And what we're seeing in today's economy is that a lot of people who have been doing the same thing the same way for a long time, whether it's the job they have or the business they own, and it's always worked for them, and suddenly it's not working anymore through really no fault of their own. They're still doing the same thing the same way that they've been doing for 5 or 10 or 20 years, and they're not making the money that they were, and they're not making ends meet, and it often causes an identity crisis, a sense of failure, and who am I if I'm not this thing that I've been doing successfully all these years? And that causes a lot of emotional suffering. So I agree with you. If people can let go of the emotional suffering, they'll be in a much better place to deal and actually face their financial situation.
I like how you addressed that we were working a system that worked. One of my favorite quotes when I come across people that say, well, I've always done it that way. Henry Ford said, if you've always done it that way, it's probably wrong.
Right.
And, you know, it's like life is not static. This moment is different than the moment 10 minutes ago, 10 hours ago, 10 years ago. And while we want to have patterns that create success and that we can duplicate their effectiveness over time, when something stops working, you have to change the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where people get hung up, I think, on the emotional side, is they can't make the move to change it up. And people don't change until the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so, you know, and I've done that too. I mean, I bought a house, my first house I bought at 23, and I thought, ooh, because I never had an example of wealth, and people didn't talk about money in my family. And, you know, my mother was divorced, breast cancer survivor with two small children. And so we just worked. I mean, my brother and I had to work. My mom put us to work at a very early age. I started working at 11. And, you know, you just didn't look back, and nobody told you how to manage the money. And then, you know, your mom and dad are always this, like, omnipotent being. And so you just figure everything is okay. And I never knew how any of that worked, and I went and I buried myself, you know, because I bought the money pit. You know, the rose-colored glasses came off after closing, and I sunk a ton of money into my house, but of course I had to have the fancy BMW because, well, I was a stockbroker, so in my mind I had this image. I fell into everything that you just talked about. And my way of solving it is I ate bologna sandwiches for 6 months, and I didn't do anything. I didn't leave my house except to go work and make money until I paid it all off. And that's not always realistic for people.
No.
So when people get faced with this situation, I like some of the advice that you've given. I read your blog, and you're very sincere when you talk about some of the things. What's one of the first steps? You know, one of the first keys in our Keys to Riches Financial Freedom series is acceptance and affirmation. First, we have to come to terms that we've made a mistake or that we have inescapable debt, because until we formally address it and, like, take the blame out, you know, maybe it's our fault, maybe it's not our fault, like in your situation, you know, you have, you know, an accident or an injury for an income-producing spouse or death of an income-producing spouse. You have to take on the care of an indigent parent, or maybe you have a special needs child. I mean, life deals you all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you're in mountains of debt. I had a customer when I was in mortgages that I was able to overcome $200,000 of medical debt and still get him government financing because his son was sick. He was a single dad. Mom ran off. He had no resources. And he walked in, and his son was sick with a fever. He couldn't shake, and $200,000 and 2 months later from the hospital, he gets his son back, but now he couldn't function. He was saying the same things like you were just saying. So
right.
What was the first step that you took when you started calling your creditors? I mean, were they nice to you? Were they mean to you?
You know, the first round of calls, they were very nice. Of course, the first thing I had to confront when my bankruptcy attorney told me about debt settlement was he said that the only way to initiate the process of debt settlement negotiations with your creditors is you have to miss a couple of credit card payments, which goes against logic to me. You know, I was calling up my bank saying, this is the situation I'm in, and I'm experiencing some trouble, and can you help me? And they were like, no, 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 no.
Seems like the antithesis, doesn't it?
Exactly, and it's the same in home mortgages, which I'm going through, you know, a loan modification right now, too. We can talk about it if you want also. So I had to actually miss a couple of credit card payments, which, again, the whole identity crisis thing came up. You know, I had an 800 credit score, and I'd been paying my bills on time since I was 18 years old, and the whole, what does this say about me if I miss a couple of credit card payments? And the first thing I just had to let go of was that notion that, one, that you can keep doing things the same way and have them turn out the same way, which obviously I learned that we can't. And two, that it really had any reflection on me as a person. I was saying to myself, this is the situation I'm in. I can either choose to bolster this identity crisis and dig myself into a deeper financial hole, or I can let go of any notion that what I'm doing here has a positive or negative impact on who I am as a person, and just say I'm moving forward in the best way I can. So I stopped paying a couple of my credit card bills, and sure enough, within a couple of months, I started getting phone calls that I wasn't getting when I was current, saying, what's your situation and what can we do to help you? And initially, they always, for me anyway, and I find this is pretty consistent among most of my readers, they always want to try and keep you on a payment plan. They want to keep you paying interest because that's how they make most of their money, which is fine. That's their motivation and their business model. It just wasn't working for me at the time. So I would say I want to enter into settlement negotiations. And the great thing was nobody was ever surprised. Nobody ever said, you what? Oh, my Lord, I can't believe you want to settle your debt than less than you owe. And because I had so many credit lines spread across so many different banks, I started to see patterns in what was going on. They were all approaching this the same way. It was clear that this was part of their business model, that their banks are in the lending business, and that part of their business model is that some of the loans they make aren't going to come back in full. It's why there is the whole risk assessment portion of lending. And I started to get that this is part of their business model. It's legal. It's what they do. I felt much more comfortable, actually, with the process once I got into the process and realized that it is a process, that it's not some obscure, arcane thing that I'm asking for alone in the world. And initially, the phone calls were quite pleasant, and it's fun in my book and also on the DVD of my recent seminar. I give the whole conversation of, you know, what happens from the moment they call through the whole thing, and you get through it and you realize it's not that bad. And the funny thing that I find among a lot of my readers is that this is what people are frightened of. When they hear about debt settlement negotiations and they realize they have to miss a couple of credit card payments to do it, and then the collection agents are going to call, they're terrified of this notion of a collection agent call. The third-party companies that advertise that want people to pay them to settle their debts for them use this. They say, get out of the harassment and get out of the pain and the suffering of these collection agents. You don't want to talk to them. And I was going through it going, this isn't that bad. They're nice people. They're just doing their job. As long as I didn't get upset on the phone and take it personally and get angry, they didn't. They usually ended the phone calls with, we're sorry to hear that you're going through a tough time, and we hope you have a nice day. It was a process that they were participating in, and I did as well. And that for me was a big lesson in not just the settlement issue on credit cards, but also that notion of we vest so much almost mythical, fantasized reality about things that we haven't done, which often stops us from going and doing the things that we should do because we have this whole story built up in our head of what it's going to be like. And I think that a lot of people don't go through debt settlement when it could be right for them because they're frightened of getting into this collection agent phone call situation. And I say, get into it. See what it's like. See if you're good at it. Worst case scenario is you hire a company or you choose not to go through debt settlement.
Well, and it's your legal right to be able to tell them if they're harassing you to not call anymore.
Yes.
But at least engage them in the conversation and see what they have to say.
Sure.
You know, that's my thought on it. One of the things that I think that people get hung up in, and this week's key is create credit. So not only are you an Investor's Edge guest, but your information is totally proximal to today as well, and that is that, you know, while we think of credit as one of the four layers of risk, and it's our character determination. What credit says about us in as we evaluate the credit profile, it's a snapshot of a moment in time from here and behind us. And when we don't pay our bills and we don't address them and we see tons of lates or erratic payments, that's what's worse than seeing a few collection accounts from a couple years ago. I mean, that's the beauty of credit, because it's a moving, living document.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, when people say, well, my credit score is 800, well, yeah, maybe it was when you pulled it the last time, but it could be higher or lower because information changes every day
mm-hmm.
in your credit profile. You know, you charge something, your balance goes up, you make a payment, your balance goes down, and then the company reports it. And you don't know, because there's no standardized format for that reporting, your credit is always in a state of flux. And when it's pulled today, it's just a snapshot. And today, it may not look so good. You may have missed a few bills, but if you continue to not address them and don't talk to your creditors and say, well, I can't pay it anyway, well, you don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you talk to them and see what they have to say.
Yeah.
You know what? It's better on your credit. And, you know, when I worked closely with all of the mortgage underwriters when I was in the mortgage business, and I had a mortgage branch that I ran, that, you know, you can explain away blips in time where everything was catastrophic. Like this one gentleman that I speak of that I dealt with, he had all of these medical collections, and he was so grateful that these doctors saved his son's life. He caught some weird, funky, little-known virus that almost killed his son, but he got his son back, and that's all he had. You know, the son's mom was gone. It was just him and his son, and he was laid off at the time, so he didn't maintain his health insurance payments, and that's where he got hung up. And so we could see that all of this stuff occurred within a few months span in all of his credit, and he wound up defaulting on it because he couldn't make minimum payments. He was sending him at least $5. But once he was able to negotiate all of those things down for pennies on the dollar, because you know what? They would rather spend their money and their time making new loans than chasing bad debt that's
mm-hmm.
never going to pay. And open collections on your credit account, on your credit profile, show you you have to pay those off if you go to get a mortgage. You can't underwrite around them, especially nowadays. They used to,
mm-hmm.
in the free money days that we had a few years ago, you could get around some of that stuff. But, you know, now especially, you can't. If you negotiate it, get it settled. Even though it says paid less than agreed, it still says paid. And a mortgage lender will look at your credit explanation letter and get an understanding that this person had a catastrophic event in their life, and they took an active role in addressing it. And they manned up to the debt that they committed themselves to, or the debt that was thrust upon them, like in the situation of yourself or this gentleman with his son. And they manned up, and they addressed it, and then they moved on, and your good character will always show through on your credit. That's what people get afraid of. Oh, well, I have bad credit. Well, you screw up, you know, 10 years ago and you don't do anything to fix it, it's probably still going to be bad. But you can screw up and say, okay, I screwed up. Let's fix it.
Right.
And then address it. Get it over with so you can move on. Because then you can put all those emotions aside too.
Exactly. And one of the things I did learn was that obviously when you start missing some credit card payments in order to enter the negotiation process, your credit does take a hit, but when you actually settle that account, it rebounds a little bit, not entirely, but some, because it was, as you said, it's not an open account anymore. It's a paid, settled for less than amount owed, but that's better because it does show them that you did face the situation and come to some agreement that obviously the bank found amenable also because they took the deal. But the thing that strikes me when you tell me the story about the man and his son is, thank God he did make that choice. Thank God he did make the choice to say, my credit score is not as important as my son's life. I don't, for the moment, I'm not going to worry about my credit score. I'm going to worry about my son's life. I myself have been quite struck in the last couple of years with just how successfully the marketing of this thing called a credit score has told people, that it again, we were talking about identity before. People put a lot of identity into their credit score. We've almost been taught to think if you have a high credit score, you're a good person, and if you have a low credit score, you're a bad person. And the trap in that is that people will make poor financial and poor personal decisions in their life in order to preserve their credit score because they extrapolate emotionally that means they're a good person. And I like to actually do the math and say your credit score is important. It is a financial factor in your life. It does have financial impact in your life, but it's not
well,
the
it has
only
a value,
financial factor.
But credit quality will beat that out anyway. A mortgage underwriter doesn't want a number. You can get a high credit score with one open account that just happens to have a zero balance the day that they pull your credit.
Right.
They're looking at credit quality anyway. When you're talking about mortgages and car loans and things, they want to see multiple trade lines and they want to see a 24-month history and how you manage your debt over time. They're not going to – the number is just the starting point. It's and especially now, they've gone back to traditional underwriting standards. They're not going to be hung up with this. And with the new revision of the FICO scoring model for this year, FICO 08, that they did, in 24 months, anything that was negative, if you haven't created another negative in 24 months, it won't even affect your score. That's the beauty of what's going on. But, you know, unless people know that, unless people, you know, stop putting their head in the sand and living in denial, they're not going to get there.
And when it comes to a process like debt settlement, which is what I went through, I also had to look at the overall numbers as well. I mean, I had $212,000 in credit card debt. So I had in total $115,000 in debt written off entirely by my banks. So even though my credit score obviously did go down, and to be truthful, it went down a couple hundred points through this process, I looked at it as if I'm going to buy a car in the future or maybe even a house in the future, and I'm going to pay a few points more in interest on that loan because my credit score is lower, is that interest that I'm going to pay down the line on that car or on that house less than the money I'm actually going to save right now negotiating a settlement on my credit cards?
Yes, it is. It's totally cheaper.
Yeah.
It's totally cheaper. People, you know, they get fixated on the wrong number. Well, my interest rate is, 5.5%. Well, that doesn't matter.
Right.
It's about what is your payment in relation
to
your income.
Yeah. If somebody has, I'm making up a number, a $30,000 credit card debt, and they're struggling financially, and they can settle that out for $10,000 or $12,000 or even $15,000, and then they go buy a car in a couple of years, and they pay 3 points more on a $25,000 car, they're going to pay less than $2,000 total in interest, in additional interest, over the course of a five-year loan. Well, to me, if you can save $15,000 or $20,000 on a credit card now and have that cost you $2,000 over the next 5 years of car payments, $25 a month, that's a good financial decision.
Totally.
Even if it affects your credit score poorly, if you can separate yourself from this notion that your credit score says something about you as a person, which
well,
I
and you know, and that's
does.
Been drilled in by some really popular finance, personal finance experts and authors.
Mm-hmm.
I'll remain nameless, but you know, you can't keep perpetuating that. You know, we already have enough that we are trying to identify with and keep up with the Joneses and be the Joneses and all of that stuff. We don't need to throw something else.
It's true.
It's not an indictment. A negative credit profile is not an indictment. It's what you do with it that makes
right.
all the difference.
Exactly. It's how you face it and address it and choose to live through it. And as we were saying about emotion, I say that a lot of people want to get out of debt or get their credit score higher because they think once they do, they will then be relieved of the negative emotions they're feeling, the pain and fear and stress and anxiety. I say if you can let go of the pain and fear and stress and anxiety first, you're going to be in a better position to deal with either your finances or your negative credit score and address them and fix them because you're not suffering through them. Let go of the emotion now, and you'll come out financially more healthy than if you think dealing with the finances will eventually make you stop suffering.
I agree. Now, when someone goes to talk to a debt collector, everybody wants to know what to say. But let's start first with the taboos. What do you definitely don't want to say?
Well, I was always honest with my story. When they would say, "What, you know, you have a great credit history and you've always made your payments, what is it that caused you to fall behind?" I could say, you know, the story that I told at the beginning of this show, that my investor passed away and I'm doing the best I can. The movie didn't sell, and this is where I'm at. You know, I'd love to go sell my movie tomorrow and be able to write you a check for the whole thing and not have to be where I am, but I am here. I would say the most important thing isn't necessarily what you say or don't say, but how you say it. If you can leave the judgment out, leave the self-recrimination out, talk to the person like they're a person. Don't blame him or her on the other side of the phone because they're calling you as a collection agent. It's just their job. And have a normal conversation without acrimony or bitterness. That's the good start for actually finding a place to talk to these people, because nobody wants to negotiate with somebody who's bullying them on either side of the phone call.
Agreed.
And then once they actually do enter into negotiations, I found they usually started very high. Of course, this was a year and a half ago. I had most of my creditors start at 85 or 90%. They'd say, "We do." After months and months and months of saying, "We don't settle, we don't settle, we don't settle," you have to get back on a plan and keep paying your monthly interest payments. They would offer to reduce my monthly interest, to reduce my payment, to put me on an extended plan. They'd give me all sorts of offers to get me back on an interest payment plan. And when I finally just stuck to it long enough and said, "I really want to settle this account," somebody finally got on the phone and said, "We do actually," no, though you've been told we don't, "we do actually do settlements, but we start at 85 or 90%, which I always got a chuckle. I had one card with a $76,000 balance. 90% was like $70,000. I said, "If I had $70,000, do you think I'd be behind on my monthly payment?" But over the course of time, another month they dropped down to 65%, and another month they dropped down to 55 or 45%. I settled virtually all of my debt in the 30 to 35% range, about a third of what I owed. But I had a client just last week with a $46,000 balance, and after the months of saying they don't settle, when they finally came back and said they do, their first offer was $16,000. They dropped $30,000 off his debt and by, you know, down to 35% right off the bat. So things have been changing in the last year and a half, where they are now from when I started, because the credit situation in the world has caused banks to, I think, enter negotiations more quickly and more leniently than when I was doing it a year and a half ago. So people get even better settlements even faster, I think, than when I went through it.
When we talk about the debt settlement process, now, I know on your blog you say, well, people say, "Well, I can't negotiate, you know, a debt," and you used an example there about how when you stop making the payments, you don't go just run off and party with that money, that you set aside that money because that can become part of what you negotiate your payment to be down, your one-time lump sum payment. Can you explain a little bit more about how someone should structure that, like how they can put pen to paper and come up with that?
Sure. A lot of people, when they hear about debt settlement and they realize that in order to settle a debt for less than you owe, you have to actually make that payment. If you have a $10,000 card and you reach a $3,500, 35% settlement, you have to send them the $3,500. And a lot of people who are either not working or working, you know, paycheck to paycheck without putting aside a lot of savings or don't have savings, they just throw their hands up in the air and think, "Where am I going to come up with $3,500? So instead of going through the debt settlement process, they keep paying their $250 a month in interest, and over the course of a year, they've paid $4,000, and they still owe $10,000 in debt, or $9,800, whatever it is, when they take the small amount of principal out of your monthly payment on a credit card. So I say, for that person who's making that monthly payment, if you think that debt settlement is right for you and you've entered into negotiations with your credit card company, don't take that $250 that you've been sending to the credit card company and go spend it, you know, wantonly elsewhere. Open up a separate bank account. Don't just leave it in your own bank account. It'll disappear. open up a separate bank account and pay yourself that same, whatever your monthly payment is. I'll use the $10,000 loan as an example with the $250 a month payment. In the 10 months that it might take you to reach a settlement with your bank, you'll have set aside $2,500. If you put in an extra $3 a day, which is less than most people spend at Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts or their favorite, you know, shop on the way home, that's an extra $1,000. And suddenly here at the extra expense of $3 a day is a $3,500 amount sitting in a bank account that you can actually use to settle that $10,000 credit card that you would have sent to that same bank anyway, just as interest. And not only will you be saving the $6,500 up front off the balance, but if you were to keep sending in that $250 a month to pay off the loan, it would take about 12 years and wind up costing you $35,000 total to pay off that $10,000 debt. And instead, you're paying it off for $3,500 now with the small bit of difficulty that comes with being stringent about your commitment to pay it off and setting that money aside and making that upfront payment.
Well, Kenny, you have brought some great information to the forefront. We're at the end of our time, and I can't believe it because you're so engaging, and I know that our listeners are really enjoying hearing from you. In addition to giving us your website and contact information, which for those of you that don't have pencil and paper handy, it's always available on our website at unlockyourwealth.com. But give us one final sage piece of advice that you think that out of everything we've talked about, what would be the most important thing folks should focus on?
Well, I would say overall the most important thing is definitely let go of any identity that you attach to your finances. You're not your finances. You're a human being with a full spiritual, physical, emotional, and intellectual life. You have a family and a job, and the number in the bank or the number on your paycheck is not a definition of who you are. It's just a number. Let that go and treat your finances like a business, the way business do. And the number one thing that I'd say about debt settlement itself, which we didn't get into, is if you are going to go through the process, and I cover this in the book, get all of your settlement agreements up front in writing before you send in a check. And there's much more detail about that in the do-it-yourself bailout and in the DVD of my first seminar that I did a couple of weeks ago. Both are available, the book and the DVD, for $19 on my website, which is settleyourcreditcards.com.
Great. Well, thanks again for joining us on a Saturday, especially on a holiday weekend. So thank you for taking time out to be a part of our broadcast. And we will go visit your website and learn more about debt settlement.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
It's been great to have you. Now, we will have more Unlock Your Wealth Radio coming up right after this.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am Heather, your hostess with the Financial Mostess. And I mentioned trivia question earlier, and for those of you who are interested in playing the game, you can win autographed books and tools from our featured guests, as well as financial coaching from the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. In order to participate, you can do it one of two ways. You can call into the show with the correct answer at 718-508-9002, or you can participate in our chat room online from our show page at blogtalkradio.com/unlockyourwealth. Sign up, become a friend, and then join the chat room. And if you are a little gun-shy and you have stage fright and you don't want to be on the air but you still would like to win something fabulous, please participate in our chat room. And this week's trivia question has to do with our midweek update broadcast that we do on Wednesdays at 11. It's our 30-minute shot in the arm to carry you over until you can get your 2 hours of good stuff. And the trivia question is, we talked about biggest money worries. So name one of the biggest money worries from the midweek update to win. Again, the phone number is 718-508-9002, or you can chat your way in. We actually had one winner last week who chose to send an email, and since no one had called or participated in the chat room, he also won too. So I was pretty excited about that. So everybody's getting excited about the trivia question. And if you want the trivia question for yourself, you've got to be able to sign up for the e-zine in order to get that before everyone else. So you can do that simply by sending an email to ezine@unlockyourwealth.com, and we will subscribe you, and you can have advance information before the show. It's that time again.
Tell me, how to be a millionaire.
Yes, it is time for that Millionaire Minute. The Millionaire Minute is a segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate in your life right now today. And this is from Investopedia.com, and we're going to talk about 6 millionaire traits that you can adopt today. Number 1, independent thinking. Millionaires think differently, not just about money, but about everything, time and energy. Everybody else spends attempting to conform. Millionaires spend time creating their own path. Since thoughts impact actions, people who want to be wealthy should think in a way that will get them to that goal. Independent thinking doesn't mean doing the opposite of what the rest of the world is doing. It means having the courage to follow what's important to you. Number 2, they have vision. Millionaires are creative visionaries with a positive attitude. In other words, wealthy people do not only have big dreams, they also believe that they will come true. As such, wealth seekers should set lofty goals and not be afraid of uncharted territory. Millionaires also have skills. Writer Dennis Kimbrough interviewed successful people to determine the traits they had in common for his book, Think and Grow Rich. He found that they concentrated on their area of excellence. Millionaires also tend to partner with others to supplement their weaker skills. So if you don't know what you're good at, take a poll. Ask your friends and family and use training and mentors to refine those strong skills. The next one, passion. Billionaire investing guru Warren Buffett says, money is a byproduct of something I like to do very much. So enjoying your work allows you to have the discipline to work hard at it every day. People who interact with money for a living, bankers, for example, often love creating new deals and persuading others to complete a transaction. But finding your dream job may take time. The average millionaire doesn't find it until age 45 and tends to be 54 years old on average before becoming a millionaire. Investment. Number five, millionaires are willing to sacrifice time and money to achieve their goals. They are willing to take a risk now for the opportunity of achieving something greater in the future. Investing may include securities or starting a business. Either way, it's a step toward achieving great financial rewards. Start investing now. And last but not least, millionaires have salesmanship. They are constantly presenting their ideas and persuading others to buy into them. Good salesmen are oblivious to critics and naysayers. In other words, they don't take no for an answer. Millionaires also have good social skills. When writer T. Harv Eker analyzed the results of a survey of 753 millionaires for his book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, he found that social skills were more important than IQ. So bear this in mind. Now, fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you and imagine yourselves with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well as reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality. And that's your Millionaire Minute. Moving on, it's always a good time when we get to play this.
It's a need you gotta fail. It's news you gotta know. And news by the numbers is your favorite part of the show. Yeehaw!
Yes, it is that fabulous time. We have missed her, the ever-popular, luxurious, golden-haired, locked lady. The fabulous producer of this radio show, Karen Gurm. Welcome to the broadcast, Karen.
Hi, Heather. Glad to be here.
So glad to have you back. Nobody has known what's gone on with the stock market since you've been gone.
Well, let me enlighten you. This week, jobless rate hit 9.7%, but stocks rallied. Charlie Blaine from MSN Money reports that U.S. unemployment hit 9.7% in August, the highest rate since 1983. But investors cheered a smaller-than-expected decline in payroll employment and sent stocks higher. The Dow Jones Industrials were up 97 points to 9,441. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index was up 13 points to 1,016, and the NASDAQ Composite Index was up 36 points to 2019. It's the first time in 3 days that the NASDAQ has been above 2,000. The rally came on a day with very light volume, as many investors had slipped away for the long Labor Day weekend. Markets will be closed Monday. Technology stocks, especially Apple and Microsoft, were the market leaders, with strength also coming from big industrial stocks such as General Electric and Caterpillar. GE was the Dow's biggest percentage gainer, up 3.1% to $13.87. Caterpillar, up 2.4%, contributed 8.5 points to the Dow's gain. While there is concern that stocks are overbought, Friday's finish had to cheer investors. stocks pushed higher into the close, a signal that investors are confident about the market, and it appears that an economic recovery is coming. And that is your News by the Numbers. I'm Karen Gurm.
Thank you. We're so glad you're back in the saddle, my dear.
Thank you. It feels good to be back.
Outstanding. Now it's that ever-popular time where we talk about the keys to riches. And for those of you who are just joining our broadcast for the first time, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And here we are already to our Create Credit Key, and who better to help talk about credit and illustrate the concepts that we have than Curtis Arnold. He's CEO of CardRatings.com, and he's regularly featured by all kinds of national media outlets like the Wall Street Journal, the Today Show, Good Morning America, The Early Show, USA Today, PBS, and on and on and on it goes. In 1998, he founded the for-profit consumer organization U.S. Citizens for Fair Credit Card Terms. And in June of 2008, he published How You Can Profit from Credit Cards, Using Credit to Improve Your Financial Life and Bottom Line. That's put out by FT Press. And he's also co-authoring another book on person-to-person lending for the Complete Idiot's Guide series of reference book, and this is the Complete Idiot's Guide to Person-to-Person Lending. He is also co-chair of the Arkansas chapter of the Jumpstart Coalition for Financial Literacy, and that really is important to me because it's a national nonprofit organization that seeks to improve personal financial literacy for young adults. So I am so excited to have Curtis on the broadcast. Curtis, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for the warm introduction.
Oh, well, absolutely. I'm so excited because, you know, there's so many people out there that are preaching money management, credit management, you know, debt consolidation or eliminate your debt here. And it's not about anything other than them making money. And what makes me so happy is to know that you're involved with creating financial literacy, because that's the one thing that we are missing in our schools. And who better to illustrate that than my granddaughter, who says, I can balance a chemical equation but not a checkbook.
Well said.
And how many chemical equations is she going to have to balance when she's shopping at the grocery store, making financial decisions, deciding to take on a mortgage, things like that? So it just, I'm really excited that you're involved and you're proactive in financial literacy, because that's where we need to be. There was a generation where you didn't talk about money. And, you know, you weren't supposed to bring it up. And then any time, you know, money was always the sore subject in our house because we never had any. And we were always working so hard. And my mother was always, you know, she was a dichotomy. She'd push you to go get whatever you wanted in this life. But then when you started talking about it, she was like, we can't afford that. What are you thinking? Blah, blah, blah. So it's great that we're teaching our youth. Now, tell me about how you created your website and what does it do for consumers?
Yeah, you bet. CardRatings.com I founded 10 years ago, and it was really out of a lot of personal struggles with credit card debt and misuse of credit. And I did not take a personal finance class in college, and I don't even think it was offered. But regardless, I went to the School of Hard Knocks Credit 101.
That's where I went. I got an advanced degree there.
Yeah, and so I racked up during undergraduate school. I was on full scholarship, so that was great, and I had a little bit of savings. But over time, I went on from undergraduate to graduate school. Long story short, when I was out of graduate school, I scratched my head and started adding up my bills, credit card bills, and I had to the tune of about $45,000 in credit card debt. And I was like, how in the heck did this happen? And it, you know, I still scratch my head, but it was so gradual, and I bought into a lot of lies when I was in school, one of which is that, you know, this debt is temporary, that when I get out of graduate school, I'm going to, you know, have a six-figure income and, and pay this stuff off in, you know, no time flat. And, you know, it just amazes me. But it was such a gradual thing. But, you know, credit card debt kind of equated to snowball going downhill. Starts off really small, seems insignificant. But as it goes down that mountain, it gathers momentum and mass.
Oh.
And by the time it's about three-quarters of the way down, you know, which is about the time I was, you know, my last year or two in graduate school, it was incredible, you know, inertia. The momentum, mass, and the energy was unbelievable. And,
it's,
you know,
crushing.
Paying those minimums. Somehow I never got delinquent on credit cards. I barely kept my head above water. But as I grappled with that debt, how to pay it down, I started educating myself about credit cards. You know, what is a good interest rate? How do you get a good interest rate? What is a balance transfer offer? How can I utilize these offers to save money? And I use self-help techniques. And I, you know, my story has a happy ending. I gradually paid down that debt. It took me quite a long time, several years. Using self-help techniques, nothing against some of the, you know, outside credit counseling agencies. Some of those are legit. But I think if you can do the do-it-yourself approach, that's the best approach, and that's what I did. And as I paid down that debt, I thought, hey, this is cool. And, you know, unfortunately, there was no consumer resource at that time that allowed consumers to comparison shop for the best card offers. And so I saw it as an opportunity to really kind of tell my story. And then so I did something really basic. This is pre-Google days. You know, I talked to we have six kids, and I talked to them about life before Google, and they just kind of stare at me with a gay look.
The headlights.
But so I submitted. I did a simple web page. It's all on AOL. And put it, you know, basically telling them some offers I took advantage of, some techniques. I submitted it to Yahoo, it got picked up, and then started getting a little bit of traffic. And it became very therapeutic because folks, you know, read some of my tips, and then they said, you know, emailed me. I had an email link on there, and they shared their tips. So it became really cool, and I felt like I was helping folks. And so the original goal for the site was just to, you know, provide a review of some of the best cards out there. And it was a one-page simple site. And long story short, it is... blossom into, I've lost count how many thousands of pages we have. We have, you know, almost 100,000 pages just on our forum alone. It's become a tremendous consumer resource. It's really, I think, helped level the playing field for this industry because there was no consumer body or organization that was providing a comprehensive listing and review of credit card offers, at least on any regular basis. And so it's been exciting to see, and I, you know, it's very much consumer driven. I give full credit where it's due, and that's to the consumers who have made the site successful.
Outstanding. Well, when someone is going to start out for the first time with credit, how do they use your website as a resource tool?
Well, you know, good question, and so many of us fall into that category. Either we're new to credit or we're trying to rebuild our credit. So cardratings.com, we've got all this, the new credit card law, and that's going to, part of which has already gone into effect a couple of weeks ago, most of which will go into effect in February of 2010. But so there's some new laws that pertain to the credit card industry that are pretty sweeping reform. I'm sure you've talked about it before.
Yeah.
But if you're new to credit, I've always maintained over the years that the most consumer-friendly approach is to get a secured credit card. Now, I'm not sure how much you've talked about secured cards in the past, but, you know, historically, if you go back several years, secured cards, even up until recently and still today, have some type of stigma attached to them. And unfortunately, they've got a bad rap. Because a secured card, the downside is you have to put up, you know, money in a savings account to open the credit card account, basically collateral. And so they usually match dollar for dollar. You put up, you know, usually $250, and you get a credit line of $250. But what you avoid is the unbelievable fees that are normally associated with these subprime scum-of-the-earth credit cards. And, I like to tell it like it is. To me, these subprime cards, I mean, that's a nice little PC, phrase to describe them. But from my viewpoint, I call them fee-harvesting cards.
Well, yeah, because, you can only charge so much in interest because, usury is a state-regulated thing, and we don't really have usury laws here in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And, willing buyer, willing seller negotiating freely in an open market will dictate right. what that rate will be. So they can't, since they can't kill you on the interest rate, they whack you on fees for everything.
Yeah. Yeah, in particularly true with these subprime cards. So if you don't go the secured route, the option is, if you're trying to build credit using a credit card, and certainly there's other ways to build credit, but, probably definitely one of the most easy ways to build credit, if not the easiest, would be through a credit card. And so if you go, you look at your options. If you don't go the secured route, you're going to go with one of these subprime fee-harvesting cards. They're going to give you about a $250 credit line. In the first year alone, typically, they're going to gouge you with about $200 in fees on average. Now, these are, the fees are crazy, the creative names they come up for these fees. I mean, there's upfront fees, there's monthly maintenance fees, there's account activation fees, there's annual fees. It's unbelievable. You put a calculator to it, add it all up, it's about $200 in fees. So they leave you with about $50 available credit, which is a total ripoff. Now, fortunately, our legislators have taken issue with this. And they have said, starting in February, that I think the new law will say that they have to limit fees to one half of your credit line. But even, you got a $250 line, even if you're paying $125 in fees, which would be half, to me, that's still crazy.
It's smarter to do a secured card because you put up the $250, but it's still yours and it's earning interest.
Yeah, it earns interest typically. I mean, it maybe only be a 1%, but hey, it's better than nothing. And you get that money back after you graduate. Usually you use that secured card for about 18 months. You use it responsibly. You want to make sure, and this is on cardratings.com, we check these out. Want to make sure it reports to all three major credit bureaus. And that's the fastest way for you to build credit. And there's a nice thing about secured card. It's kind of a safety net because if you get yourself in some trouble, and let's say you're not able to make that minimum payment, or hopefully you're paying in full. I like to say pay in full because I don't want consumers to get in the habit of thinking they can only make the minimum payment. That's where I was, and look what it did to me. But regardless, if you get yourself over the your head and you start getting yourself in a little trouble with that secured card, at least you've got enough money in the bank to secure that credit line. And believe me, if you start getting, anywhere near seriously delinquent, they're going to freeze your account and they're going to, get a hold of your funds there. But it's a safety net, and so worst case scenario, you may be a little delinquent, but it's not going to get yourself in, too much trouble, hopefully. So I like that aspect, too. But secured cards are a great way. Usually about after 18 months, you track. The best thing to do, I think, is to get your credit score when you start out in this process, okay? And then after about a year, go ahead and pull your score again to see where you're at. Now, we've heard stories of folks coming out of bankruptcy, new to credit, whatever, coming out of a debt settlement, a foreclosure. I know a lot of your listeners are in the mortgage area, that have had incredible results doing this themselves, not paying a credit repair company hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to do something that is not brain surgery. And what's more, dealing with some of these credit repair companies, as I'm sure you agree and have talked about, I'm sure, are, most of them are rip-offs to begin with.
I know. It doesn't make sense to pay, I think secured cards are a great way to establish or reestablish your credit because you get a lot of these little dinky cards and all they want to do is fee, 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 whack you, whack you, whack you.
Mm-hmm.
And that benefits nobody but the bank, because now if your intent was to try to reestablish credit, you can't even go out and buy anything yet because you're busy paying off all of the upfront fees, your initiation fee, your monthly service fee, your whatever it is. And then if you call them up, you know, and you want to get your credit line increased because you've had good payment history, you know, they'll do that every 6 months, but then they're going to charge you $25 to review your credit. And then after they review your credit, they extend your credit line. But now that, you know, you get a new credit extension fee, so it's $25 to check it, and then another $25. And, oh, they only gave you $50, so you're where you're not really ahead anywhere.
Yeah, crazy. Now, secured cards, one downside is they do have one fee typically, and that's an annual fee. But it's nominal. It's usually about $20 to $40. If you see one over $40, I would avoid it like the plague. But most of the reputable ones are in that range. The other problem with subprime cards, in addition to the fees, is a lot of these subprime issuers, you know, have at one point or another been under the gun from the FTC. They have notoriously bad customer service, and they really, I mean, kind of like subprime mortgages, the industry is full of a lot of charlatans, and so you expose yourself to that risk. Now, let me say this, though. Not every secured card is 100% consumer-friendly. The vast majority are, but we have a site on cardratings.com that we've rated that I encountered a couple of years ago that just kind of blew me out of the water. That, and as I was looking through the fine print, which, you know, most consumers don't really take the time to do, I looked under grace period, and I was shocked when I saw the word none. Unbelievable on a secured card.
Yeah, most
using
cash
your own
advances most cash advances never have a grace period. That interest starts accumulating the millisecond you swipe it like an ATM card.
Correct.
But I'm surprised on secured cards that they don't have any.
Yeah, correct. I mean, this was one, I've seen a second one since then, but again, this is on purchases, not cash advances. Like you say, you know, 99.9% of those do, but on purchases. So, you know, you use that card, doesn't matter if you pay off in full every month or not. That started accruing interest from the day you put something on the card. Unbelievable, crazy stuff. So, you know, still, and that's where cardratings.com, a site like ours, which, by the way, we provide for the New York State Banking Department. We host and conduct their quarterly credit card survey. And so, but that's where a site like ours is so beneficial as a resource to help you avoid those bad apples, because they're out there.
How many cards would you say you have reviewed totally?
Well, we are, our claim to fame is, you know, the most comprehensive source for comparing card offers. Now, we have about getting close to 500 cards. Now, is that every card in the universe? By no means, no. And there are a couple other sites that have come along after us that actually have more cards listed than we do. But they have very basic info, such as they'll have the card name, the interest rate, and annual fee. We look with the New York State Banking Department. We have a contract with them. We look at about close to 50, I think it's 45-ish data points. So we're not just looking at the typical, you know, interest rate and fee that everyone else is looking at. We feel like if you're going to really rate and review a card objectively, you've got to consider, you know, cash advance rate, you know, grace period, all these other things that are so important that most people really don't look at when they're, you know, considering a card.
Now, when the thrust of this show is about creating financial independence, and we use that, or the vehicle that we use to do that is real estate investment, because it's the easiest to facilitate and have others build our wealth. So we know that we have to be able to qualify for a mortgage. And, you know, conforming conventional mortgage underwriting guidelines is 4 trade lines, 24 months, no lates. And if we're going to go with a government option, like FHA, VA, or rural development loans, we only need 2 trade lines for 24 months with no lates. So if somebody was going to start out in creating their credit, What would you say the best things that they need to look for, and they can be resources on your website or not, but when someone is comparing card terms and they've never had a credit card before, this is for our younger audience, what do they need to be looking for?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I wrote the book, as you mentioned earlier, How You Can Profit from Credit Cards last summer. And it's you know, people read that title, they have some interesting reactions. But it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's about how to turn the tables on the credit card companies and use credit to your financial advantage. And I'm living testimony that it works. So if you're new to credit, let's say you're a student. And by the way, there's sweeping reforms coming to the student marketplace in February. That's going to totally change the student market. But you want to look at, you're going to pay a higher interest rate, okay, because you typically have limited or no credit history established. So now higher, I would say if you see one, typically it's going to be mid to upper teens. If you see one much above 19%, I would avoid it. And we do rate these on cardratings.com.
Okay.
Secondly, don't pay an annual fee. As a student, you shouldn't pay an annual fee. There's so many student cards out there that don't charge annual fees. But so look at the fee, look at the interest rate, go with a reputable card issuer. If it's a bank that, you're getting, because my son just went off to college, our first son went off to college, and got pretty emotional. He's already home this weekend. He brought his laundry home as a gift. So my wife's busy doing that. But anyway, interesting.
We're excited our granddaughter's in another state, so we won't have a laundry issue.
Yeah, well, we probably should have sent him a few hundred miles away. But anyway, so he got his first credit card offer as soon as he turned 18, which was last December, pretty soon thereafter. It's amazing. I mean, now again, some of this aggressive marketing is going to change next semester, but as of today, this is what your sons and daughters are facing. So, if you are a teen, you're in college, look at the interest rate, look at the fee, and just realize that it's – I don't usually recommend student cards for freshmen to begin with because I think there's so much transition. And I see what student credit card debt has not only done to me but done to millions of students out there. And it's so important to get started on that right foot. But so that's, there are exceptions to that. It's just a personal conviction. I go to college campuses every semester, have for years, and I speak to personal finance classes. I speak to kids, and I see, all the negative, incredible backlash that student credit card debt can cause. But it's a double-edged sword, and it has a positive end of it, and that is when it's used responsibly. The catch-22 here is that if you've never established credit, you're new to credit, then no one wants to give you credit.
Exactly.
So the beauty of a student card, which is also the downside, is that they typically don't require any income, although, again, that's going to be changed in February. And they don't require...
I didn't understand that one.
Yeah. But they don't require any credit history. And I've got... The income thing bothers me, always has. But at the same time, for someone who doesn't have any credit history, a student card is a very easy way to establish and build credit while you're in school. So when used responsibly, that's the key. That's what the Jumpstart Coalition, what we're all about, is teaching kids. College is really too late. You've got to start elementary age.
Agreed.
So those are some things to think about as a student. Again, don't get in a rush, but if you wait to your senior year, okay, and you say, I'm not going to deal with credit, and you decide, I'm just going to say no because I don't want to deal with the hassle. Credit cards are evil. I mean, you could take that mindset. But the problem is that when you graduate and you go out to get your first house or go out to get your first auto in your name, whatever it is, your credit is not going to be there. And,
right, and you just got to not go nuts, and that's not. I don't know why that's an unrealistic expectation, but be disciplined. This is your one chance to get it right the first time,
right.
And you know, for kids to be smart about it. And with all the resources out there today, it just blows me away that we're not taking more time to educate our children from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, when we start teaching them about money and about responsibility. And it really gripes me with all of these parents and say, oh, I just want my kids to be kids. Well, your job as a parent isn't to enable your children to stay children. It's to empower them to become successful adults.
Right.
And part of that is financial education.
Yeah, I think parental involvement is key. I know with our son, you know, we sat down when he was a sophomore. We put him in a get checking seminar. He spent the better part of one Saturday there teaching him some basics, you know, how to balance a checkbook, what's a debit card. And then we graduated him, I think his junior year. We put him with a plain Jane ATM card to get him used to using a little bit of plastic without all the downside. He used that fine. We graduated him on, no pun intended, his senior year to a full-fledged debit card, which has a whole host of potential issues. But, again, not the downside of a credit card in some respects. So
right.
He taught him how to balance that, keep record his transactions. And so by the time he gets to college, we've actively been engaging in conversation with him. I've told him about the credit card debt, you know, issues that I've dealt with. But that's so important. You know, it's great to offer a mandatory personal finance class in every school, which we should be doing. And by the way, I think the new credit card law totally missed the boat. Because instituted all these laws, and we did need some regulation of the industry, I believe. But there was no thing in the whole law about the need for financial literacy. In fact, well, take that back. There was something in the original bill for students that suggested taking a personal finance class in college. But guess what? They wiped that from the law in its final form.
Right.
Unbelievable. Totally missed the boat.
Yeah, it's so important, and half of the problems that we have today would have been cured up front with financial literacy requirements.
Yep. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, preaching to the choir there, but boy, I get worked up about this because, you know, I see all the devastating effects it causes, and I see how our teachers, and my parents, by the way, are both teachers. They retired after over 40 years in public school teaching. But I see how all these teachers are teaching for the test and how financial literacy just gets shoved off into a lower priority area. And no one, you know, with a few exceptions, is really waving the flag saying, hey, there's something wrong with the system here.
Yes.
And meanwhile, our country gets more and more into debt, and we, our economy, you know, we're trying to come out, but it's still in the toilet. I think a lot of that has to do with us as individuals using money responsibly. If we all as individuals use money responsibly and are financially literate, do you think our country would, you know, the chances are that it might actually have a balanced budget or greater? I tend to think so. But I'm an optimist, you know, call me crazy, I don't know.
If you could leave our listeners, because we're coming close to the end of our time together, what would you leave our listeners with that they need to know about, whether they're trying to establish or reestablish credit? What's the most important thing you think they should be focusing on?
Yeah, I think, you know, wherever you are, you want to get, especially if you're interested in real estate, you know, you want to get credit cards. You're going to get the best offers if you got about a 730 FICO score. Okay, real estate, to get the best rates, you know, you got to have north of that, you know, more like, you know, north of 750, that range. So you want to focus to leverage and use credit to your advantage to get the absolute lowest rates on a mortgage or anything. You want to focus on getting in that range. So see where you're at today, okay? Say you're at 690. Well, that's kind of near prime. It's not, you know, subprime, but it's not prime. So you're kind of in that average credit. So you need to work on bumping your score up, you know, 40, 50, 60 points. The nice thing about it is if you use some self-help techniques, and on cardratings.com we got a cool forum where a lot of people share these tips, you can bump up your score. You check your credit reports. That's something everyone should be doing. not at freecreditreport.com, you know, the cool snazzy TV ads, but at annualcreditreport.com.
Annualcreditreport.com.
I know you talk about that. But check your three bureaus at least once a year and then monitor that, and then focus on, you know, those negative trade lines. If you got them, hopefully they're going to fall off. We've got FICO 08 that is starting to take effect, so you need to read up on, you know, the nuances of that. A lot of creditors still haven't, you know, accepted it, but they're kind of gradually doing it. But focus on what, and really educating yourself, myfico.com, on how to boost your score up. Because once you're in that gravy range, the creditors, you know, as we come out of this credit crunch, are going to be knocking at your door. And with mortgage rates still, you know, pretty darn low, that's how you leverage a system to your benefit and you profit from credit. And that's what gets exciting. You talked about millionaires earlier. A lot of successful millionaires, this is one of their secrets. And, you know, you take advantage, you use credit to your advantage. I mean, with credit cards, for example, my wife and I, we never pay interest. We use a reward credit card. We usually get about over $1,000 cash back every year. On our small business that we had, we'd typically get $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 cash back every year. Not exactly chump change.
No.
But we were using credit to our advantage, making these creditors work for us. That's what I love.
That's awesome advice. Well, Curtis, thank you so much for joining the program. And your website is cardratings.com.
Yes, it is.
And if people want to get a hold of you, is there a number they can reach you at?
Sure. They can call 501. We're in Arkansas. 501-663-0314. There won't be anyone there on Labor Day weekend answer the phone, but they can leave a message. They can email us feedback@cardratings.com. And my most recent book is, you know, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Person-to-Person Lending. I'd love to be back on your show and talk about that because that's a, and I'm sure you've addressed it, but that's a phenomenal growth area that, you know, you can, believe it or not, you can get mortgages that way too if a traditional bank.
Yes, we should have you on the Investor's Edge and talk about, you know, when people talk about hard money lending, we can have you back definitely for that.
Yeah, would love to, because there's that investor side and the lender side on the peer-to-peer lending, you bet.
Well, I'm so excited that you took time out of your holiday weekend to be a part of our broadcast, and we look forward to having you on another show coming soon.
Hey, my pleasure. Anything to get away from these six kids, so you get them for it.
Get ready, get more of them college age and send them off, and there you go.
That's right. Thank you,
All
though.
All right,
I enjoyed
you
it.
Have a great holiday weekend. Thank you so much for joining the broadcast. And we are going to have more Unlock Your Wealth Radio right after this.
Has your cell phone or iPod ever run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Well, now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right now on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S Industries.com.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches right after this.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we are fully engaged in the second half of our broadcast with our Keys to Riches program. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with our broadcast, each week we bring you a new key, and this week we are on Create Credit. It's our ninth key. We only have a few more to go before we start all over. And this is always the most controversial key that we seem to have in the sense that you have so many differing opinions about credit. And you have some financial gurus that say, get rid of it, cut it up, kill that debt, blah, blah, blah. And it's not necessarily the credit card's fault. It's what we understand credit to be, what it is and what it isn't to ourselves, and what we do with it that makes all the difference. Now, I think some of the personal finance gurus that focus on credit score are out to lunch. They're missing the boat. And I also think the other set of personal finance experts that say you got to have a debit card and not do it any other way are also out to lunch because they're missing some of the important things that credit does for us. And appropriately leveraged, using credit for the right things, not leveraging our loafers and our lifestyles, but appropriately leveraging financial opportunities for us to make money are good things. Every millionaire borrowed some money, and he didn't borrow it to go out and buy the latest Louis Vuitton handbag. He borrowed it to invest in his business, to buy some sort of raw materials to create a finished product or present a service. And if we are to follow in the footsteps of the financially independent, we need to learn how to leverage ourselves appropriately, focusing on financing the right things to foster our health financially. And we do that by creating credit. And we want to create the ideal credit profile to get us our first mortgage and then be able to leverage ourselves appropriately thereafter. Now, if we want to go the quick and easy way, government financing only requires two trade lines for 24 months with no late. And a trade line can be a car payment, a credit card, another mortgage, a loan of some sort. You only need two. And if you are 18 and you're in college, because they're changing the laws coming next year that you have to be 21 and get a co-signer,
21 or get a cosigner, if you want to be able to establish debt or establish credit on your own without having to ask someone else to incur debt on your behalf, then you need to go out and start establishing your credit now with good payment history now. Because one of the greatest things, especially if you're a college student, government programs will allow you to use your college degree as part of your time on the job when you get a new job to qualify for the income portion of your mortgage. There's four layers of risk: character, capacity, capital, and collateral. Collateral is what the property itself, what is it worth? Capital is how much money are you putting into it? Capacity is your ability to repay the note, and that's your income. And you have to be on the job for a couple years or in the same line of work, but if you've been flipping burgers and you graduate college and all of a sudden you're a chemist, well, you don't really have job history, but when you use government financing, you can use your college degree in chemistry to qualify, saying that, yes, you have been in that field. And that's a phenomenal little-known underwriting guideline from government financing. And if you don't start establishing your credit now and being responsible for it, you know, don't be financing your party paraphernalia and the latest fashions. Use it responsibly and use only what you can afford to comfortably pay off at the end of the month and establish that credit. You're going to be so much better off. And who better to chat about this than our fabulous college correspondent and Keys for Teens segment host, Alyssa Wagenhals. And so, Alyssa, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm well. How's the second week of college going?
Oh, it's great. I'm just out to lunch right now. Well, leaving lunch because it's the president's hall food isn't that great all the time. So we went out today.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to coming and visiting you. So hopefully by the time I get there, you won't be into too much trouble.
Of course not.
Well, what do you have thought-wise on this week's key, Create Credit?
This key sounds cool because just about everyone wants to or has to have credit. Online purchases, travel, housing, everything seems to need credit these days. They say it is easy to get credit or too easy for college-age kids. But with the new credit laws and everyone in debt, it can be a bit overwhelming. So this is my view on the credit key this week. I have to be fiscally responsible with all areas of my financial life, and this includes credit. I know that if I am to become financially independent in my lifetime without inventing the next widget or hula hoop, at some point I am going to need credit. Credit does not have to be a death knell to me because credit is an opportunity for me to show my discipline and conscious experience of good judgment, knowing that credit is a tool and not an entitlement. And with good use of this tool, I can leverage myself systematically to build financial independence. And because I'm young, I have a clean slate to do it. How does that sound?
Oh, well, that's totally right on the money. That's exactly where I was going with it.
Can you explain the layers of risk one more time so I get where credit first came in the mix?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for your contribution this week also, because I know it's a holiday, so you're going to go out and have some fun. But to really talk about what the layers of risk are is, again, you've got the four C's, what we call character, capacity, capital, and collateral. And we're focusing on the character one. Now, if you remember in the first segment when we were talking to Kenny Goldie, and he was talking with us about all of that emotion that was tied up with what was going on and, you know, people being fearful about their reputation being, you know, staking it on this number. You know, the credit portion of the four layers of risk is how we handle ourselves. It's our character testament. But remember, this shows us how we manage our money. And the beauty about the way credit scoring works and about the way the credit profile is laid out is it maps all of your credit experiences by month for the length that you have had these experiences. So if you've had a credit card for 10 years, it's going to show 10 years worth of history. It's so great. Now, the way the scoring model works, which is different from the way just you look at the profile itself, the scoring model looks at the most recent 24 months and bases its score on that. What we need to look at is this a catastrophic event? Is this a single event process that disrupted our credit, if that's what our issue is? Or is this a chronic problem with discipline and lack of responsibility in managing our debt? And that's how we have to look at credit and the character segment. And remember that, you know, while so many people are caught up in how it looks, it's not so much how it looks, because our credit, especially our credit score, is a snapshot of one moment in time. And it's a fluid, moving, living document, our credit report. And knowing that, it's not about what it looks like today. It's about, over time, how have we managed our financial lives with regard to credit. Now, if you have great credit in the four layers of risk, you're going to have more favorable income terms. Maybe you can go with higher ratios on your mortgage payment. Maybe you have to put less money down, or a combination of both. And credit is cool. I always say in the four C's, credit is cool, but cash is king. Okay, so you can have not so good credit, but if you put enough money down, you can offset that crappy payment history or catastrophic event if you put enough money down for that capital layer of risk. So we're going to have a great show notes for you on credit on the website. And so for those of you that are interested in receiving the show notes, make sure you sign up for the e-zine. It's e-zine at unlockyourwealth.com, e-zine at unlockyourwealth.com, and you will receive a copy of our show notes on credit, because the four layers of risk are important. And while people put a tremendous amount or undue amount of influence or weight to the credit category, always remember that while credit is cool, cash is king. And so we can offset any of those credit issues that we might have currently by putting down more money, taking a higher interest rate. All of these things can play into how we create financial independence for yourselves. And it doesn't matter if you've had a catastrophic event, because these are things that we can recover from. If you remember listening to Curtis just a moment ago, you can create a secured card with not much money and be able to reestablish your credit very affordably and offset every good payment you have. Every new trade line with another good payment creates more momentum toward what you are trying to accomplish and gives you distance between the catastrophic event or the crappy payment history, and today, and how you're living your lives today. And so it's never a curse once you goof up your credit. It's how you handle it and how you correct it. And one of the greatest things about underwriters is they're human beings, and so as such, they can relate to losing a job, having an indigent parent that they have to take care for. They have special needs children, like in the case of Kenny, you know, his partner passed away, and without key man insurance or even knowing what that is, he was now obligated to pay all of these debts. So it's not where you are, but what you do with it if you have bad credit. If you have no credit, it's the same thing. It's what you do with it. And what's so important and that people don't understand is on-time payment history isn't the most important part of your credit. 35% of your score has to do with available credit. So carrying balances does not benefit your score. If you have all of your credit cards maxed out, that is 35% of your credit score that you just threw out the window. And again, I'm not a big person to focus on scores. because credit quality will trump credit score anytime. Because you could have something that makes your score not so high that's not really relevant to anything in your credit profile that's negative. You just never know. Now, and they're changing the scoring model. So if you accidentally forget a payment, like you had all your bills and you set it on the console of your car and then they fell between the seat and the console and you didn't grab them all and one of the bills didn't get out on time, so you've got a late payment history, the new scoring model is going to change how all of that works. But 35% of your score is open and available credit. And so you can simply increase your score by reducing your balances and paying them off every month. And then another big chunk of your score that people don't realize is an important part of their score is your payment history, like how long you have had credit, not whether it's been on time or not, but the length, the tenure of your credit score. There are 85 factors that go into your credit score, but only three really matter, and that is how long you've had your credit open, because that shows experience over time, and your discipline and good payment history and good judgment will show. And then on-time payments, but that's only 30% of your score. And then 35% of your score is open and available credit. So do not get caught up in competing with the neighbors on fashion, footwear, garbage, toys, things that you don't need that you're financing for. If I said to you, let's go to a restaurant, let's go out to dinner, and the meal was $20, but I said, you know what, I'm going to charge you $28 for this meal, would you say, okay? Well, if you don't pay cash for that meal and you don't pay your credit card off at the end of the month, you have now just paid $28 for a $20 meal. Does that make sense? Like, who in their right mind would pay one-third more for that? You wouldn't. But that's what happens when you carry a balance. It makes whatever you bought that much more expensive. And interest needs to be your servant. You do not need to be a servant to interest. And so the way we do that is by controlling our debt. We can pay interest or we can collect it. It's up to you. But let's get to the nuts and bolts, okay? So this week, in our key for Create Credit, our key statement is, my credit is a reflection of who I have been and who I am currently, but is not an indictment of who I will be, and I have the power to change the direction of my life and my credit profile. Did we get all that? I have the power to change the direction of my life and my credit profile. So our key affirmation for this week is, I am great at managing my credit. I am great at managing my credit. For those of you joining us for the first time, we say our affirmations right before we go to bed. So it's the one thing that our brain focuses on and our subconscious mind works to create new neural pathways to accomplish our goals. Then we say our affirmations again in the morning to get our brains refocused after that fabulous night of dreaming and focus on what we were trying to accomplish every day so we know what our goal is right up front. And then anytime we encounter negativity throughout the day, whether it be with a spouse, a coworker, a client, a child, a parent, it doesn't matter. We are going to then say our affirmations one more time to get rid of that negativity, because what we focus on, we bring to fruition. And so if all day long we're repeating our affirmations and expunging negativity from our lives and focusing on the positivity in our lives, that is what we will bring to ourselves. So this week's affirmation to add to your pile of affirmations is, I am great at managing my credit. So I'm so excited because our credit profile is so important, but then so not really. And there's nothing that a great credit explanation letter can't fix while we are accepting our responsibilities and moving forward to either correct or establish our credit profile. Remember to surf over to the website at www.unlockyourwealth.com and sign up for the free membership list. As soon as we launch our new member-driven website, you'll be the first to know and get all of the free goodies that we will have up there. Additionally, just because this is such an important week with this week's key, go to the website and visit the page where all of our guest information is, because these websites between Kenny Golding and Curtis Arnold are going to give you some great tools to help you with your task this week. And your job is to pull your credit and evaluate your credit profile and figure out your debt reduction plan to eliminate the luxury debt and only prepare yourself to start incurring debt that's going to leverage you to wealth. Thanks so much for joining us. We will look forward to seeing you Wednesday at 11 Pacific Standard Time for the midweek update. So glad to have our guests joining us, as well as Alyssa and Karen back in the saddle. Thanks so much, and you all make it a great week. We'll see you Wednesday.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.